In this episode, we'll cover Peter Zion's 11 reasons that Europe will die from the accidental superpower and his newest edition, The Accidental Superpower, 10 Years On. Reason number one is the European geography. It all starts with the geography because Zion is a geography guy after all. The North European plain holds the majority of Europe's population and has one of the world's densest footprints for both population and trade. The dark side of this is that there are no barriers between the river valleys. Each country's heartland is borderland. This makes every European country competitive to succeed and secure themselves before their neighbors become too strong. Zion describes it as an all-or-nothing situation that has led to some of the worst wars in history. Europe also has peninsular countries such as Spain and Portugal, and island countries such as Great Britain that are insulated from the feuding of the North European plain. However, if a victor were to emerge from the plain, they could channel resources that have been used for internal fighting to look outward and threaten the peninsular and island countries. This sort of power grab could annihilate the Europe that we know today. The second reason Europe will die is Europe today. If a warring Europe seems far-fetched, we only need to look back to World War II for a clear picture of how this continent can be devastated. Peter says that the post-World War II order and the Bretton Woods system have completely altered the dynamics in Europe by opening up greater trade and alliances in lieu of competition for scarce resources. The resultant peace has given Europeans a vacation from their own brutal history. The European Union has grown confident that this peace will last, and many countries have scaled back on military spending and invested elsewhere. The confidence in a future without war led to the incredibly ambitious unification project of a currency union, and that currency is where the unraveling begins. Reason number three is the euro. In the finance section of his last book, The End of the World is Just the Beginning, Peter explains the roots of modern banking. He describes how we evolved from using barley as currency to precious metals to fiat currency. And it's important to recognize how this system depends on a tremendous amount of trust in the value of the currency itself. For us in the United States, we take this for granted because our river system connected our many states and made our coast-to-coast financial system into a cohesive whole. Because Europe is not integrated by river systems or language, it is much harder to integrate its financial and banking system. This disunited Europe is the root of a financial crisis. While some European countries were connected by river systems that promoted trade and economic flourishing, others were not. These lagging countries had received financial assistance but were less rich, productive, and educated than others. But with a common monetary system, capital could be lent easily to economies that had no experience taking loans at the rates normally reserved for powerful economies such as Germany. The resultant debt buildup became a massive burden for these countries. Zion cites the over 600 billion euro bailouts from 1999 to 2014 in his first edition of The Accidental Superpower. This is all to say that Europe is limping along on a broken currency system. Reason number four is banking. The banking situation may be worse than the currency. Zion claims that Europeans see banking as a national prerogative that puts government agendas ahead of banking fundamentals such as collateral and profitability. Essentially, directives outweigh good decision-making. Governments can use banks as a means to speed up investments, and many banks are state-owned. This system leads to two dangerous geopolitical outcomes. First, because European finance has so much state direction, the presence of state-linked banks is enormous, while the presence of non-government finance is minimized, meaning the majority of private credit is obtained from state-linked banks rather than agnostic stock markets or corporate bonds. Second, when recessions hit, the banking system's highest priority is to keep the government going. This means doubling down on financing government deficits. This leaves no resources remaining to lend to businesses. Growth in Europe then must occur without support from its banking center. Put these together. Private credit comes mostly from state-linked banks rather than markets, and those state-linked banks are skewed toward government deficits. This is a recipe for economic stagnation. Reason number five is the leadership of the EU. France was devastated after World War II, But the American-led security agreements of the time gave Paris the opportunity to launch a European integration process that France would come to dominate. Zion posits that Germany, while powerful, was divided after the war, and its profits have often been funneled via the EU budget to fund French goals. But a deal like that couldn't last forever. And in 2008, it changed with a new wave of German politicians who saw themselves as allied with France, but no longer beholden to Paris. Germany's leaders were still willing to pay the bills to keep Europe united, even with all the bailouts, but they wanted to use their money to gain control of the European system through things like keeping other nations dependent on German supply chains. The French probably don't want to take a backseat to Germany. And so, we have an ongoing tension over who really steers Europe. Peter writes that this might all be manageable if Germany had enough money to fix all of Europe. But it doesn't, which leads us to the next point. Reason number 6 is money and time. Germany needs to keep growing economically to float Europe. But it can't. To explain this, Peter Zion describes 3 paths that a country can follow to achieve economic growth. They are consumption-led, export-led, and investment-led. Germany has been an investment-led and export-led system in a time when Europe had an excellent demographic for consumption of German goods. But that's exactly where a few changes come into play. A. Countries of Southern Europe are under financial pressure while they are rapidly aging. Thus, consumption-led growth in Southern Europe is nearly impossible. B. Germany's demographics make a local consumption-driven model impossible as well. C. German exports actually stifled industrial growth in Southern Europe. And now, with the euro, these countries can't devalue their currencies to compete on cost, making their export-led growth impossible. D. Southern Europe's only remaining option is investment-led growth, and Northern Europe is their best source of investment. But these are more bailout-type packages to manage debt rather than investment in new growth. E. Europe's demographics have forced Germany to look beyond Europe for external markets to maintain export-led growth. These markets will be harder to reach as the Bretton Woods system breaks down and deglobalization evolves. Germany may still be willing to fund bailout after bailout and lead Europe financially, but the system can't tolerate this stress forever. Even if Germany and France can agree on how to run the EU and keep it productive, the demographic situation will drive the Europe that we know to become obsolete. Zion says that the one bright spot in all of this is that Europe is retreating from its place of global influence. And as the European system breaks down, it probably won't take down the rest of the world with it. Reason number 7 is Germany's crisis. Zion points out that the Germans' role in the world wars demonstrates not how aggressive they are, but how desperate their situation is. They must be prepared to defend themselves in every direction. This pressure has forced Germany to outdo all of its neighbors. That is, until the Bretton Woods era, when Germany stood to gain so much from alliances with their former rivals. However, Germany remained incredibly efficient. Even the European financial crisis helped German exports to outcompete other exports. But how long until these circumstances change? And when they change, what will happen to Germany? At the time of his writing, Peter Zion found that 16% of German GDP came from exports only made possible by the Bretton Woods system. Even worse is Germany's dependence on outside sources to provide millions of barrels of crude oil per day. So, Germany is going to need to compete for supplies and end markets for exports. Back to the world wars. The Germans' role in the world wars demonstrates not how aggressive they are, but how desperate their situation is. Zion expects that yet again, Germany will challenge the European status quo. Reason number 8 is aggressive neighbors. Let's take a look at Russia. When Peter wrote The Accidental Superpower, he pointed out Russia's demographic pressure to invade Ukraine by the year 2022. Here we are now, in a world where Russia has invaded Ukraine. This puts tremendous pressure on Europe to be prepared to withstand Russian aggression. For more on how that will play out, you can watch my most recent interview with Peter Zion. There's a link in the description. Reason number 9 is middlemen. Poland will not go quietly. Russia or Germany each have the ability to take a fight to Poland. Russia especially needs to take Poland, and it might appear that Poland can't do much to defend itself. Poland may be a natural leader of the former Soviet satellites of Europe, But that set of countries is disjointed, and many are dependent on Russia for oil or natural gas. Poland's unique edge lies with Sweden. Here's where Peter's geography emphasis comes into play. He sees Poland and Sweden as complementary allies. Sweden's geography meant that historically, it needed to control the Baltic Sea with crews of brawny Vikings rowing their ships for short voyages, rather than crossing vast oceans with scrawny sailors on long voyages. This amphibious military approach is reflected in modern Sweden, which effectively controls the Baltic Sea to this day. Pair this advanced maritime power with Poland's land-based industrial power, and the two could flourish together. And Sweden has motive. Similar to Poland, Sweden fears German or Russian influence and would be eager to see Poland succeed in defense. If Poland is attacked by, say, Russia, the Americans can remain a step removed from the conflict by supporting Sweden. And Sweden has nuclear weapons to deter Russia. All of this makes for a tense situation in a vulnerable Europe that is exposed to an aggressive Russia. How long can it remain peaceful? Reason number 10 is life after Europe. Will all of these developments in Europe lead to wars? Who knows? But it would be surprising if none of them did, and the consequences for Europe could be disastrous. If Europe descends into war, Zion sees France as the country most likely to rise from the ashes. France is less dependent than others for agriculture and energy. It also has an aircraft carrier and nuclear weapons for deterrence. Reason number 11 is the 10 years on perspective. Despite a decline in their demographics and economy in the 10 years since the first edition of the Accidental Superpower, Europe is muddling through. However, debt, aging, and the retirement of skilled workers will catch up with Europe. The Ukraine war has pushed security priorities to the forefront, making the EU more dependent on the US and Great Britain for their military power. Germany has many virtues, but it is suffering. While they have cut out Russia, Zion points out that they have doubled down on relations with, quote, that other genocidal dictatorial power, China, end quote. The silver lining is that the Ukraine war has given impetus to EU collaboration. For evidence, compare the years-long contention and delays over joint European bonds to the speed of pre-purchasing ammunition for Ukraine. With or without a war, the EU's demographics and economy are dying. Zion writes, quote, Europe will still die, end quote. But they have found ways to not die yet. I'm Brad Carr, and this episode is the first in a series on the most important ideas from my interviews with Peter Zion and his books. To see the complete series, be sure to subscribe.